Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato. Oh, here we go. Look, he's come up with another one. And the oil on my apex, it's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, they get better every week, mate. Oil on my apex, that's a belter.
Oh, thank you very much. I take that with the compliment which it was intended. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's been been some calamity in my little local market town this morning with fire engines and police and ambulances and a car shunt.
What's happened?
Involving some lady in a that was being, I think around motor racing circles there, affectionately known as the jaws of life. The cutting machines were out, so there'd been a shunt, which is amusing. Well, not amusing, but amazing. Mm. Because you can't do any more than like 3 or 4 miles an hour in the little town centre, in the little village set centre.
But no one's so actually not, hurt or anything. Everyone's fine.
I believe not. Yeah.
And did you go out towards the bakery for your daily breakfast in order to actually observe the situation and kind of find out exactly what was going on for local gossip?
Exactly. That's what I was doing. I was going to the bakery to get a large white farmhouse.
Very nice.
Yes, because I've got my mum and dad staying with me at the moment. So obviously the obligatory bacon sarnies with a nice crusty white loaf.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, this is the kind of, you know, everyday relatability, which I think makes this podcast a real success. And it's something that, which I think that we should perhaps share with today's guest as and when we meet said person.
Yes, indeed. In fact, our guest today, well, she's a very special inspirational lady. She holds the record for the most wins, podiums, pole positions and points in the W Series. And I can tell you this because I know it for certain and I've seen the drive. She's bloody rapid. Mm. It is, of course, Jamie Chadwick. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. My morning has not been nearly as eventful as yours. So,
Had a bacon sarnie, though? That's the most important thing.
I've had a bowl of cereal. It's just
rubbish.
What cereal was it? I mean, what's your favourite cereal, Jamie Chadwick?
Yeah, it's worse. It's not my favourite cereal, but the cereal I had this morning was Bran Flakes.
That's like a mass market affair.
I know. And I don't know. It's a terrible cereal. I shouldn't say that because maybe.
Well, I mean, you know, some may say it's a terrible cereal. Others may say that it's an excellent cereal. So that way we're covered either way. Yeah. We're not going to upset the head of Bran Flakes.
What about favourite breakfast, Dave? What's your go-to?
What, my breakfast cereal or favourite breakfast?
No, breakfast cereal, and then onto your breakfast cereal.
Okay, if I was to choose a breakfast cereal, it'd probably be something like Crunchy Nut Corn Flakes.
They're great.
Yeah, nice. They're good. I like those because you don't have to put any extra sugar on them because they are sweet enough, much like yourself, Jason. And then in terms of breakfast as a whole, then you can't go wrong with something like a sausage bap. In fact, I had a sausage bap yesterday. I had to take my daughter to rugby training and it was a Sunday morning and it was pouring with rain outside. And I thought, I'm going to go and sit in the clubhouse. I'm going to have a nice hot chocolate and a sausage bap with Tommy sauce on there. And it was magic.
Lovely.
Did you say hot chocolate with a sausage bap?
Well, yeah, but not in the same glass. I mean, I had a hot chocolate to drink and then I had
on
a sausage
side.
Bap. To eat. Well, yeah, in the same way.
That's not right. That's not right.
Why is it not right?
Jamie, do you want to endorse me here? That's not quite right, is it?
Hot chocolate's more like a little pick-me-up at the end of the day if you really need it.
Thank you.
So you don't think that a hot chocolate can be a complete like-for-like swap for a coffee or a tea? Really?
No.
Interesting. No, you see, I was there and I kind of thought, what do I fancy? I thought, I love a cup of tea, but I don't really want a cup of tea in the rugby club because it'll be out of an urn and the tea bags will be rubbish and it'll be largely disappointing. I didn't really want a coffee, so which is why I went for hot chocolate. But now that you're looking at me as if I'm some kind of weirdo, maybe I chose the wrong thing.
I love that expression.
You know, if you're if you were to be found out as being a serial killer.
Yeah.
And
when you say cereal, you're not talking about cereal like we were talking about before. Right.
And you kind of find out and you're like, look back at those times that we knew Dave and they're like, oh, he wasn't that. Oh, like there's nothing, like no cracks, nothing that seemed obvious.
Kept himself
to
himself.
And then I'll be like, no, he had a hot chocolate in the morning with a bacon bap, sausage bap. That was clearly a giveaway.
Disturbing, isn't it, I think, Jamie?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know what? I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, what you learn and what other people think about you? Because I never thought at the time that it was in any way weird or potentially concerning. But now that I do, I will be thinking about my order.
Yeah, it just feels like it's too sweet to go with your sausage. Do you know what I mean?
So to speak.
That's all wrong. Can we cut that?
Is there a due edit point there? No, I know what you're saying, Jason. I'll have to take a long, hard look at myself and think about it for next time because it's clearly not right.
No, I think that's wrong, actually. I'm going to try it tomorrow. I'm going to try a sausage bap and a hot chocolate just to see if my weird Mark mindset is correct or not. Mm.
Absolutely.
I think it might be a revelation.
Well, maybe it might be the way forward. It might be a whole sort of future breakfast thing. But listen, you know, I mean, I know that this podcast is largely about us, Jason, but, you know, we do like to talk about the guests as well. Jamie, let's bring you in here as well. As we said, thank you and welcome to Fueling Around. We've got loads of stuff that we want to talk to you about today and difficult to know where to start, to be honest with you. But I think it might be quite good to, you know, sort of work out the backstory in terms of how you became one of the fastest young drivers on the planet, quite frankly. Mm. What is the backstory in terms of your still very young and fledgling motor career, but a very, very rapid rise through the sport?
Oh, yeah, crikey. I mean, from my side, it's a bit of a weird one because racing was never really in my family. I kind of found myself getting involved in karting, whatever it was, quite late. I was 12, which most people say is still young, but
ancient.
I just, well, my older brother sort of went to, I think it was a friend's birthday party or something, and then I sort of wanted to give it a go myself, tried go-karting and just did it as a hobby, really. I loved playing sport. I was always a bit competitive, especially with my brother, and yeah, I just enjoyed my first experience of go-karting. And it just went from there, really. I started, like I said, as a hobby, progressed into something a little bit more serious. Never really did that much in go-karts, then progressed into car racing in the Ginetta Junior Championship. And yeah, it was never, especially probably until I was maybe 16, 17, something I ever thought was going to be a career, which I know you probably shouldn't admit. You should always think, you know, you have big aspirations, but it's just something I enjoy doing. And then, yeah, when I sort of started getting more seriously involved with it, more opportunities came about, and yeah, I started to feel like this was something that I did want to pursue more professionally and see what opportunities came about, really.
I was going to say, you certainly made your mark very early on, and not just like once or twice, but, you know, particularly with the W-Sit series, you know, year in, year out, just stamped, you know, your raw speed. And actually, as time gets on, you need more than raw speed. You know, you need a bit of savvy, you need a bit of racecraft. And that was all there. And year after year, you've been it. You've been, you know, the dominant force. Mm. Absolutely. So, I mean, that's amazing, eh?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I think too much about. I think W Series kind of came about at a really good time for me. I was racing in British F3 at the time, or just before W Series came about. And for those that don't know, W Series is an all-female championship, but it's fully funded. And it's kind of this opportunity for girls that are currently in the sport to be out racing, get that experience, and ultimately race on what now is a Formula One package, which, as an opportunity goes, was a bit of a life changer for me.
Yeah.
The first year, it was relatively short calendar. We only did, I think, 6 events, and it was all in Europe. And then it grew to being on the Formula One package, 8 races. And then this year, sadly, the season got curtailed a little bit, but still racing out in America as well as Asia. So I was really lucky with the opportunity. And I think when I went into it, I just knew this was something I had to sort of grab with both hands and do my best in. And I've been fortunate that the seasons I've managed to do it have gone well, but ultimately I think I've always seen it as a springboard now to look at what now I can go on and achieve elsewhere in the sport.
Well, we have to discuss the fact that your team is obviously the Jenner Racing team. And for those that don't know, yes, it is Caitlyn Jenner. First of all, have you met her? What was it like? When did it happen? Tell us a story.
I have met her a few times. She was actually at quite a lot of the races this year, but it all came about as, honestly, a bit of a bizarre conversation to kind of ever have, especially in the racing world. Jason, you know, it's all so intimately, all the people you know, all the same people. It's always the same characters, and everyone knows everyone. So then suddenly when you get a call from Caitlyn Jenner about driving for her team in W Series, it's all suddenly taken.
And sorry, just to interrupt for a second. When you say you get a call from Caitlyn Jenner, I mean, literally, how does that happen? I mean, does your actual phone ring, Jamie, and it's a number from America and it's Caitlyn Jenner, or does Caitlyn sort of go through somebody to get to you? How does it physically happen?
Good question. There was a bit of
like, it was meant to be, I think, a Zoom call with a group of us on, and it was all meant to work like that. And for whatever reason, that didn't happen. And I just got a message saying, call this number. So I just called that number, expecting to call anyone. I wasn't necessarily expecting it to be Caitlyn. I was told that it was to do with Caitlyn Jenner's having a team in it, but I didn't realise the call was going to be directly with
Caitlyn Jenner, with actual Caitlyn Jenner.
And you do not mistake that voice. So
no,
I on the phone, and because it was with America, it was quite late at night. So I had a couple of glasses of wine to like relax myself into it before.
Unbelievable.
She was awesome, actually. The thing that was really cool, actually, because I think as soon as I kind of got over the fact that I was on the phone to Caitlyn Jenner, her understanding of the sport was really, really good. And she knew everything about me, everything that I had done.
That's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really
cool. Weird when you're sitting there having a glass of wine at whatever time of night talking to Caitlyn Jenner, who arguably knows more about you than you do.
It's one of those, I always think back to it because the whole thing kind of, there's just so many sort of pinch yourself moments. Because we ended up going out to Malibu to meet her properly sort of a few weeks later. And there's moments when you're sort of turning up to a house and it's like, what are we doing? How's my life come around to this?
Surreal, eh?
But it is surreal, and it is just, it's amazing how the sport, or me doing something that I love doing, that I'm lucky enough to do, has kind of gone full circle and put me in this sort of situation to experience these mad things. But I think on the face of it, in terms of racing for Caitlyn and being involved with her team, it was actually really cool because, like I said, she does do it for the right reason. She's just generally passionate about supporting women in the sport, and she loves racing. When she came to, I think the first race was in Miami, she spent more time just with the mechanics and the engineers than she did anyone else. And I think it's just quite cool because she just genuinely loves the sport.
Brilliant. What a story, eh?
Yeah, and I guess the other thing as well about Caitlyn and the Jenner Racing team is not only is she clearly, you know, invested in every sense of the word, you know, obviously sort of financially, but also emotionally invested in the sport and wants to obviously, you know, heighten its popularity. And in being the name that she is, then she's a great person to be in there because obviously she's the sort of person that gets headlines, gets interest beyond just the motor racing press, and therefore, you know, can put the W Series onto a greater stage, which would benefit you and everybody else contesting.
Absolutely. And that was kind of part of the reason for coming back to W Series with the Jenner team, because especially now, and it's become more prevalent, looking at opportunities in America, it felt like the opportunity she could give me, the exposure, everything, to then get that sort of next step up and the budget and everything required for that. It felt like that was quite a good environment to put myself in. And I think, yes, everything that she did was done in terms of being involved with the W Series, I think kind of represents that. It's now trying to get more exposure around not just women in the sport, but just generally young drivers to create more opportunities to progress up through the ranks that don't rely on sort of, I guess, heavy funding for those all involved.
Come on then, give us a little scoop. What's going on? What's next? Off to America?
I think so. I mean, I don't know when this goes out. I'm hoping it should all be kind of finalised by then. But yeah, I think most likely in America. I can say that, to be honest, everyone kind of knows. But it's more when it comes out, the details behind it are quite exciting. But yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. I've done a few tests over there in sort of the off season in the last few months, and it's
In Indy Lights.
Yes, in Indy Lights. Wow. Have you tested? Have you been over in the States racing wise?
I've been over there and watched. Yes, and looked at. Mind blowing.
Yeah,
on the ovals.
The ovals. Haven't done those yet, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But the just whole culture, everything is so different to Europe. And I'm not saying that's better than that, but it's just quite refreshing from my side to go over there and experience that.
That's really interesting you say that, because when I've been over there, mostly for filming, actually, with various car shows and stuff, you're right, it is a very different vibe, isn't it?
Yeah.
The ferry, in many ways, it's...
In what way?
It just feels like it's a little bit more relaxed, less pretentious.
Yeah.
Less... clubby isn't the right expression.
Cliquey.
But it's just...
It's
more. It feels like it's more fun, actually.
Yeah.
Would you think that's right?
Yeah. So far, that's the kind of impression that I've had. I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure in Europe for, well, I say Europe, in sort of the F1 feeder series, for Formula 2, Formula 3, for many reasons, because everyone is so competitive. Everyone wants those seats. Mm. Everyone's operating at a very high level. The money involved is huge. So I think there's a reason for it, but it is pretty intense. It's a lot of egos, a lot of... the environment's very different. Whereas in America, I couldn't believe how laid back they all were.
Yeah.
And they're all competitive. They all want to do well. But it was so laid back and just the environment. And I just felt welcome straight away. So, I mean, it's different. There's a lot of differences that seem a bit peculiar still. But,
See, I think the interesting thing is it's very easy to come away with an impression, because it is so relaxed and a very different vibe, that it's not actually serious. And I'll tell you what, it most certainly is. It's every bit as serious and every bit as competitive as European motorsport, but it's just got a completely different vibe.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And so far, I feel that suits me. And yeah, just generally American motorsports with IMSA, for those that know better, and the IndyCar program now, it seems to be quite a cool place to be going racing. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Interesting.
I'll tell you what is interesting is that the very highest level over there, IndyCar, by and large, they're all really great mates. They all really get on well with each other. They spend a lot of time away from the racetracks as buddies. That doesn't happen over here. It just doesn't. And that's actually lovely. I can remember the first time I went to go and watch IndyCar for the 100th running not that long ago, actually. I mean, I was blown away, literally blown away by the way it was. I mean, forget how quick and insane the cars are, and they certainly are, and how brave the guys are and girls are, because they certainly are. But it was just magnificent as a spectacle, as an event. Have you been and watched IndyCar around a big oval?
Yeah, I went to the 500 in 2019, I think it was.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
One of the best events I've ever been to. I mean, I was purely just a spectator, but it was cool because it sounds bad, but I take for granted a lot going to Formula One races and a lot of events that we go to, because you kind of become a bit more used to it or numb to certain things. And I think every Formula One race I ever go to, I still think this is insane, and just the level of everything is insane. But it's rare that I go to a sporting event and I'm like, wow, this is nuts.
Yeah.
And you felt that with the 500.
Yeah, massively. I just watched it and I was like, this is insane. There's 300,000 people watching it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never experienced anything like that.
You've got to go, Dave. You've got to make it. You've got to do it. It's really it's life-changing, actually.
Yeah,
it's a bit like going to the TT in the Isle of Man.
Yeah,
it's one of those things that you have to do. And we've said this a few times. We've had Carl Cox on the last series, obviously, with his TT team, and we've had John McGuinness on. And I'm fascinated by the TT anyway, because my mum's family's all Manx. So that's...
I
read that. It's a beautiful place, beautiful place. But I was going to say to you, Jamie, in terms of obviously America being next, but what's the longer term forecast? Presumably, are your eyes set on the ultimate prize, which is Formula One? Is the idea to sort of progress up through the motor racing pyramid this way, to go Formula Two and ultimately Formula One, and then join that very, very select group of female Formula One drivers, which, you're more than capable of actually being, but I guess it's just having the right opportunity and having the timing right, is it?
Exactly. I mean, I just want to keep progressing up the pyramid, and I strongly believe if I'm having success and doing well and progressing on merit and the opportunities are coming, then that's completely possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a long way to go. I mean, relatively where I am is still Formula 3 level. Even W Series is below Formula 3. So there's still a long way to go. But I think if I take it step by step and can have the opportunities and have the success at the required levels, then definitely the ultimate goal is still to get to the top. But ultimately, I love the sport, and there's so many different things in the sport that I want to do and achieve, and that definitely doesn't limit himself just to even single seaters. I think it's a lot of bucket list races that I have, that I want to do, and not even just circuit racing. I did a bit of off-road stuff with Extreme E. I really enjoyed that. So there's just a lot that I still want to be able to do and achieve, and for as long as I can have the opportunity to do it, that's all I want to be able to do, if that makes sense.
I think you're absolutely right, you know, and you know, listen, we've had this conversation many times, haven't we, Jason, about, you know, obviously the trying to change the balance in terms of the numbers of women in motorsport. You know, we had this conversation back in September, didn't, when we did Fueling Around Live at Silverstone, and we were there, Jamie, and we had, you know, Luke Goodman and Paul O'Neill and Daniel Rowbottom on there, and we were saying how we were talking specifically about Jade Edwards, and in your own mind, is it essentially a numbers game? Is it ultimately, without oversimplifying it, is it about trying to get more young girls into karting, etc., along with young boys in the same way that you did, so that you therefore got a chance of the best filtering through and they're having a decent crop of young female drivers at the end of any given year?
Yes, in essence, that is, I think, what will change it. However, I think there's a bit more to it, because if we didn't ever do anything, had no sort of initiatives like W Series or no push to get more women in the sport, I don't think anything would necessarily change, because just naturally the sport being male dominated has made an environment that means that young girls look at it and think, oh, that's not necessarily something I can do, because there's no clear role models, there's no clear role for them within the sport. And I was lucky when I got involved in the sport that I had my older brother there, so it kind of eased my way in. But now I look back at it as a 12-year-old girl in a team with just boys and just mechanics that are men, just engineers, everything. It's not necessarily an environment that a lot of young girls would want to throw themselves into.
Yeah, I get that.
Definitely intimidating, I would imagine. Very intimidating, especially at a young age.
Exactly. So I definitely think there are things that we can do within the sport that, without it being kind of, I guess, reverse discrimination or whatever the term is.
Help
it. And I strongly believe W Series has been quite good in bridging that gap, because the way I look at W Series is, yes, we want more young girls starting at go-karts levels and starting at grassroots, but W Series is bridging that experience gap for the girls that are currently already involved in the sport. So the girls like me that started relatively late didn't necessarily have the kind of perfect trajectory through the sport of doing all the steps that I needed to do maybe earlier on. Yeah. It's kind of helping me get that experience. It's funding that. And with that, giving positive role models for young girls looking at it, that they can also get involved. And that's not just us drivers, because there's mechanics. My mechanic this year, I keep using this analogy, but I like it. She was my number two mechanic, but my number one mechanic kind of taught her a lot, let her almost be my number one, and has now got a job at Alpine. So it's kind of like that opportunity, bridging that experience gap is going to help in the long term. And then ultimately, yes, it is just a numbers game, but the more girls that are involved just generally in the sport, the more culturally it will begin to change and the more inviting it will be for young girls coming through.
Yeah, and breaking down and having it not have that intimidating, you know, pit environment that you were sort of, you know, alluding to before, Jason, and making it a more, you know, inclusivity is obviously a big word in the world at the moment, but, you know, making it a more inclusive environment. Because I mean, I've heard you interviewed before, Jamie, and in as much as you've always been very clear that whatever happens with your career in the coming months and years is that you never ever want to be there is a sort of tokenist place. You don't want to be there because, you know, somebody has decided that they want to up the quota of female drivers in a series or in a team or whatever. You've always said, I only ever want to be there on merit, you know, and you've been adamant about that, which personally I think is absolutely the right thing. But, you know, you don't want an easy path, do you? You want to be there because you've actually deserved it, and you want to be rubbing shoulders with drivers, male or female or whatever, because you're the best.
Exactly. And I mean, that is to a degree easier said than done, because if Mercedes F1 team turned around, or Williams, for example, turned around tomorrow and said, we want you in our F1 seat, I'm not going to probably turn it down. But I do know that there is a very big percentage of that being because of my gender. So that definitely I've got to take opportunities where I can. And there have been huge opportunities that have come for me because of my gender, such as W Series and things like that. But I think it's just using it as a positive thing and using the opportunities in the best way without, yeah, ultimately, I know as an example, right now, I'm not ready for Formula One. The industry majority knows that there's a lot of pressure from outside the industry, pushing to get more women involved at the top level. And it's just knowing exactly where my place is within the sport relative to that. But from my side, if I'm winning or having success in Formula 2, Formula 3, even Indy Lights, like any male driver, I'd expect to be able to move up and progress in the sport. So, yeah, that's kind of the way I look at it.
Do you know what I'm seeing, Jamie? I'm seeing you in a really cool Californian house, jetting around the States as an IndyCar driver, having the most fantastic life for the next 15, 20 years. That's where I see you. Forget F1. Stuff it. Get yourself to the States.
What are you doing? Yeah, I mean, I can't envision that far down the line, and there's a lot that can change and a lot that can happen within the next few years. But I can definitely see the States being a very good place for me over the next few years. Yeah. And not just IndyCar's the ultimate goal over there, but IMSA, everything over there, the sport, generally there's a lot of good racing going on.
Yeah.
And that's something I get quite excited about.
It's a really exciting concept though, isn't it though, Jason? I know... You know, as I say, you know, if you did well in IndyCar over in the States, Jamie, you'd been fantastic. But, you know, thinking about the idea of becoming an F1 star in this country and on a world stage, you know, you think about the way that Lewis Hamilton is an iconic figure and he's an inspiration to you know, young people across all sorts of class divides, racial divides, you know, sort of gender divides. And the idea of having a female British F1 star is something that I've never experienced in my lifetime. You know, I know that there have been Formula One drivers before, but they predate me. I think it's a really interesting and really exciting concept.
I think it'd be great. Yeah. I really do. I think it'd be great. I think it'd be fantastic for sport, for our sport. And like Jamie said, I think it'd be fantastic because, you know, for the first time in probably ever, there'll be a female role model, which the young girls could go, oh my God, you know, that's what I want to be.
It totally changes it, doesn't it?
It does. And also, guess what? There's 30 seats in F1, give or take. So of course, there's plenty of space, but the industry just needs to make it happen. However, I am with Jamie on this. It needs to happen because the candidate is good enough.
I agree.
And you know, I'm fortunate enough that I've sat on the young driver program run by the BRDC and Autosport. It was formerly McLaren part of their award, but now it's Aston Martin for what, 12, 15 years. And we see the very best of the very best on a yearly basis come in and do this competition. And in fact, Jamie did it first 3 years ago.
Yeah.
29. Yeah, 3 years ago, and then has done the competition this year. And you know what? The level you need to be at to win that competition, or even just to be in it, is incredibly high. And if you know, I honestly could say, genuinely, hand on heart, everyone in the last 3 or 4 years that has been in the final, whether that be 4 or 6 people, are at such a better, higher level than the winner was 7 years ago.
Okay, so you can see that progression.
Oh, absolutely.
Real progression year on year.
Both in the car, both technically, out of the car, media-wise. The level is so impressive.
Yeah.
And it gets better and better every year. And, you know, Jamie's, obviously, we've got the big award on Sunday night. So obviously I'm not going to give anything away. But Jamie's, you know, has been in it for, you know, twice. And that against the very best of the best and done bloody good.
Yeah, I think from my side, the way I see that as well is, you know, if I don't win on Sunday or whatever happens, there's nothing. Actually, the first year I did struggle physically, but I think that was something I learned. I got stronger and I came back and I felt okay the third year. But... or the second time over. But I think it's something that I look at that and I look at, even if I don't win it, whatever, and there's nothing where I go, that's because I'm a girl that I wasn't able to
absolutely
be quick enough. So even if I wasn't quick enough on that day, I know for a fact in my opinion, that there is another girl that's maybe 6 years old now. She's maybe not even born yet, but is capable of it. And that's what I'm excited to wait for. And I think that's the thing that's going to be a big catalyst for the sport. As soon as we start getting more and more of these girls involved, and maybe one day that Water Sport Award, there'll be more than one girl in the final.
Yeah.
I think it's changed.
What do you know what? I absolutely agree with that, because, I mean, we've spoken about this before, Dave, haven't we? And actually, it's really nice to hear it from, you know, directly from you.
Mm.
I honestly do believe it is just a numbers game.
Yeah.
It's just because of the, you know, the amount of young guys at the bottom of the pack working their way through, through, you know, from karting all the way up. And once that dynamic changes, and once there's more numbers, there absolutely will be, because there is no reason, I genuinely believe this, there is no reason why a female cannot be the best in the world.
Absolutely.
Because there's just no reason. There's no reason.
It's not a physicality thing, is it?
It's mostly in your head. It's not. Because physicality can be improved. Motor racing is in your head. It's thought, it's determination, it's all those attributes, which, guess what? Girls have got that in abundance.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's actually interesting, Dave, you mentioned earlier that you were talking about your breakfast that we sadly just ripped you to shreds for.
ripped me to shreddies, yeah.
Okay.
He's good.
You were watching your daughter play rugby.
Yeah.
And it's things like that that I think now, especially in the UK, we've got the Lionesses, the England rugby girls, I think, came second in the World Cup. There's so much going on now with women's sport that just generally the numbers are already shifting. And I think motorsport moving with that is going to make a massive difference over the next few years.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, and all of the things that you cited, in particular the Lionesses victory in the Euros. It just feels now at this point in 2022, 2023, that women's sport is actually being taken seriously for the first time in a long time. Whereas it always used to be a little bit of like, there's football and there's women's football. You know, or there's rugby and there's women's rugby. And actually now it's a bit like, no, do you know what? The standard, you know, of these elite athletes is up there with anything. And suddenly they're now getting the recognition that they deserve. And I think you're right. I think that there is a really good and positive sea change, which does make what you personally and other people like you are trying to achieve in your own sport and your own discipline, potentially far more possible, far more acceptable than it ever has been before, you know, and that can only be a good thing. And as you say, to sort of create role models and change the perception of the sport to allow greater inclusivity in years to come, you know, and we're not talking about something that's necessarily going to change in the next 2, 3, or even 5 years. And, you know, arguably it might not even change properly within your own competitive lifetime. By that, I mean, you know, you're 24 years old now, sort of in the next 15, 16 years. But it might be something whereby you can actually impact change to make a legacy for your children's children or your children's children's children. You know what I mean? And that kind of thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's just changing perception. I think people have for too many years tried to compare men and women's sport, and most sports, so where I believe we can compete equally. But actually, it's interesting because the difference in motorsport as well is you've got a helmet on, so you don't really see anyway. So it's a bit different. You wouldn't try and, I would say, compare. But I think people compare maybe men's football and women's football too much, and they say, oh, the game's slow and the game's like this. And you take that out of it and just watch it for what it is.
Absolutely.
Really interesting point, because talking about the Euros, honestly, it's some of the... I mean, I'm not a football fan, really. I watch a bit of it. World Cup's been on.
Yeah.
I've watched a little bit. But I got really into the Euros, with the girls, because actually the football was brilliant.
The football was brilliant, but also I think the atmosphere was brilliant. You know, it was a real sort of carnival thing. There wasn't this, you know, I am a football fan and I sort of know all about the good, bad and the ugly with football, but there wasn't any of the ugly. It was just really, really nice and wholesome, and yeah, it was great. You know, and as I say, I think it's done so much good for women's sport and just for the general, you know, it's something that we needed in this country as well, Christ, didn't we, in terms of what we've been through in the last couple of years, and actually have that feel-good factor, which, you know, Jill Scott and the Lionesses sort of delivered in abundance. Jamie, I want to talk to you about Janetta, actually, because we sort of mentioned this before, and obviously as somebody, excuse me, who's sort of come through, how important was Janetta Juniors for you? Because it seems to me that as a youth development policy within motor racing, I think they're hugely influential, are they not? And perhaps at times, you know, undervalued maybe, yeah.
I think bang on. I would completely agree with that, because actually Janetta, the Janetta Junior Scholarship is what actually gave me my first big leg up. So my dad said to me, it's funny because I was playing hockey at the time and it was on the same date. The Janetta Junior Scholarship was on the same date as some trials that I had with hockey. And I remember finding it quite difficult initially to be like, oh, which one do I go for? And then in the back of my mind, I always wanted to go with the racing side of it. So I went to the Janetta.
Good choice.
I prepared a bit. My brother was competing in the championship at the time. So I was able to prepare pretty well, sort of having watched him. But I remember my dad saying that, you know, if you win this, then obviously we can do the season. And if not, then I'll either just stay in karting or probably stop racing, and that would kind of be it. And it wasn't like a massive deal breaker at the time, but it was like, okay, I really want to win this, to get out of karting and progress into cars. And I was fortunate enough to win that. And that was what gave me the sort of fully funded year in Janetta Juniors, and that kind of first big leg up. And I was completely out of my depth, I think. found myself, learned a huge amount in the first 2 years. It was Chris Hodgetts that brought both my brother and myself into it initially. And I learned so much, honestly. It's what kind of really taught me everything that I needed to learn initially about racing cars. And I think it's just, like you said, so undervalued being on the touring car package. I remember seeing the likes of Jason and the touring car drivers around and being like, that's what I want to be involved in. That's insane. Yeah. And as a 14-year-old, running around, not even being able to drive on the road, but racing on these circuits around the UK with the crowds that we had, it was definitely 2 years that I wish I kind of enjoyed a bit more now, looking back at it.
Well, I'll let you into a little secret. Even to this day, as soon as the Janetta Juniors leave the grid to do their green flag lap, all of us touring car drivers run to the fence to watch. I promise
really?
You that's true. Absolutely. You know, the racing is fantastic.
It's mind-blowing, though, because you watch it, you know, and as I say, I've watched it live. I watch it on TV as part of the touring car package, as you say, Jamie, and you watch it, and you just think the standard is so high. And then it always amuses me then at the end when they get out of the cars and they talk to, you know, whoever in the pit, or you see them on the podium. They're tiny, you know, and these kids are kind of 12 and 13 years old, and you think, oh my God, I've just seen these two have a complete hustle, you know, really giving it loads, and then they get out the car and they look like they should be in short trousers. But it's incredible, though, as I say, the standard which is created for these kids, and it's no doubt, therefore, that as a platform and as an education to then build upon, as you have done so successfully, you know, it's really important.
Big time. And on that, it's funny because it always reminds me of when we were, because we didn't have road licenses, none of us could drive around the paddock properly. So even though you literally just have to drive around at 10 miles an hour or whatever, all of us are stalling, struggling to like...
Is that right? Brilliant.
And every time it'll be like someone just leaving the awning and it'll be like maximum revs, like slip of the clutch and then like trunk forwards. And then you can get track and it'll be fine. But it's just funny because it kind of highlights how young we all are learning that much. But to be honest, even if you look at the level of karting now, I sometimes just put it on YouTube just to watch, because if you look at how young the talent coming through is and how good they are, it's
insane, isn't it?
Kind of echoes a little bit what Jason was saying, maybe with the level in the last 3-4 years with the award process over maybe 10 years ago or whatever. I think just the level of the standard, I guess, of young drivers now is really, really high.
Mm-hmm. I must admit, I had to eat a bit of humble pie, actually, because when Janetta Juniors was launched, the idea of it was tabled. My initial reaction was, oh, that's ridiculous. That's what karting's for. It's too young. Yeah. And you know what? Within one season, you go, got that wrong. Yeah. Really got that wrong.
It helps, though, because I think you can then learn the tracks in a what feels like a safe environment. You've got often a driver coach sat next to you on test days and things, and you can learn in what feels like a more controlled environment, actually, than when you get into an F4 car, an F3 car, suddenly that feels like, wow, this is a big step up. So it gives you a chance to learn a bit more about car racing before that.
They're very accessible, aren't they, those Ginetta G40s? I mean, they're a good car to drive as a young driver.
My brother and I, because we raced the same Ginetta Junior, he drove it the year before I did, and then he continued to race it in the sort of class above the GT5 Challenge, and we actually drove it the other day at Castle Coombe, and I was terrified. Those things moved around so much. Like, it felt initially, I was like, oh, this doesn't feel very fast, because in comparison to things that I'd driven recently, it wasn't that quick. But crikey, it's terrifying. They move so much.
Brilliant stuff. Hey, before we get on to, dull things like road cars, tell us about your involvement with a team, which is very dear to my heart, but tell us about your involvement with Williams.
Yeah, so I joined Williams 4 years ago now. So Claire was at the helm at the time, and I was in W Series, and, well, it was my first season of W Series. Claire actually came to watch the first race. And I'd had a few conversations with her before that, but didn't really expect to be in a position to be on their academy. And they didn't really have an academy as such in place. But I'd seen what they'd done with Susie, and obviously Claire was someone I always looked up to. And she came to the first race, which was a race that I fortunately went on to win. And off the back of that, they sort of created this academy young driver program that I then got involved with. And honestly, that was one of the biggest moments for me when you first walk into a team like that. And albeit they weren't having the most success at the time, any Formula One team to me was just like, this is insane. And to go in and put the team kit on and have that moment join the team officially and then go to the Grand Prix and see it as an official young driver was something that, I would never have expected. And now 4 years in, to have the relationship I have with the team, to hopefully now get into a situation where, I can have a bigger role with the team is something I was never going to expect growing up.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. So boring stuff. Road cars. Come on. First road cars, car. What was it?
First road car was a VW Polo.
Okay.
It's actually a very good car because I got it back. I had to drive it for sort of 6 months, which was a bit of a grounding period because I had a VW Polo for the first of 2-3 years of my sort of road driving.
Standard one or a hot one? I mean, was it a GTI?
Standard. It was nice. It was nice. Like, it had like a pearly white spec. Mm-hmm. The wheels were nice. And then I scuffed them to smithereens.
Good girl.
Because I can't park.
Me neither.
Can you not? Are you not a parker either?
No. It's quite bad.
Do you know what? I mean, I'm an old dinosaur, aren't I? Because I always have a chip at Soph, my wife. Watch your rims. And she is particularly bad. But guess what? I ain't that much better.
But it's something that it upsets me so much. And I've almost got to the point where I've sort of become a bit obsessed about it. I actually drove to someone's house recently. And on the way into their house, they had those width restrictors. Right? Which I hate those width restrictors because they're so close. Yes. I reversed out of where the width, because I thought, I'm not going to go through there. I'm not going to do it.
Oh, no, I drive around. In London,
I parked on a different road 10 minutes away and walked the rest of it because I didn't want to go through the width restrictors. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing. That noise when you actually hit your alloy against the concrete pavement is just horrific.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Horrible.
So I've gone the other way. So now, because I had that experience in the Polo of really destroying rims, I now park about a meter away from the curb in the middle of the road. And then I get out and I'm like having to like jump to get to the curb.
Well, what I do? I normally, if I am parking against the pavement, I normally park sort of against the flow of the traffic, as in so that I'm on the right side for the...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because actually...
So you can see.
Yeah, because if you're trying to do it on your mirror, the chances are you're going to get it wrong and you either get too close or not. And that's when you do... That's why if you normally look at cars, right, the wheels that are normally the worst are the near side ones, right? Because they're the ones that you're going to hit. Whereas actually, if you go against the traffic, then you can do the... You can actually wind the window down. You can see exactly where the curb is and you can get yourself beautifully about an inch off it.
It's called the door opening parking. The parking door technique, isn't it?
Yeah,
parking technique. I sometimes do that.
I do, except my car won't let me do it anymore because it won't let me. If the door's open, it won't engage. I'm like, nanny state. What were we talking about then? Oh, sorry, yeah, first cars. So Polo. What comes first after the Polo then?
Then I got a Golf GTD.
Okay.
Which was a good car, actually. Underrated, I would say. Again, that actually had... kind of a bit sad. I feel like that's a car that I would still go back to. The Polo's dead to me. That's gone.
I think Lee McKenzie was extolling the virtues of her Golf GTD, was she not? I think she was.
If it wasn't a diesel, I'd be all for it.
I'm with you.
But no, it was. I really like that car. I only had that for maybe a year. Actually, I'm so out of touch with my years. I can't remember how long I had that. A couple of years, maybe. But then I got... fortunate, because then I got given an Aston Martin Vantage.
That's a fair jump, isn't it?
Well, that is where my whole life has just been messed up. It's like when you fly business class for the first time and then it's like you can't go everything that's really destroyed. It's cheated the system and it's ruined cars for me because
wow. How long did you have that for, Jamie?
About a year.
Did you love it?
I did actually. I didn't love knowing what the excess was on the insurance.
Yeah, yeah. Eye-watering, I would imagine.
Yeah. And with that, driving around central London every day, being like, this is just painful because everyone else, you just suddenly feel like you're a massive target.
Yeah.
But no, I did love it. I was restricted on the miles, but I got right to the mileage that I was allowed to do because
spot on.
Yeah, literally within a mile because I love driving it and it was awesome. Yeah, I was lucky with that. But then after that, because I sold the GTD and everything, I went back to my first car because I had some reason my parents still had that. So I had six months of driving the VW Polo again.
Okay.
With the stuffed wheels, the paint like falling off the wheels. And that was a grounding experience.
A culture shock, I can imagine.
Yeah, don't feel the need to go back to that. So
so what's the current drive, or is there not one at the moment because you're in central London?
Well, because I'm in central London, I've got a Renault Twizy.
Have you?
Is that an electric one?
It's this, I can't even describe it. It's like if you were to add a couple of wheels to a motorbike.
Okay.
And make it electric, then that is what
it's
totally is.
It's kind of like an invalid carriage.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Can I say that?
Yeah. Why not?
Is it turquoise blue?
It's nice or black with a bit of orange. It's actually quite good.
Is it all right?
It is. It's great in the summer because you can literally just take it anywhere, park it anywhere. The thing I hate the most about it is the fact that everyone stares at you.
Yeah.
And I just feel really insecure because everyone's just staring at you like, what are you doing driving?
And is it short enough where you can park nose in?
Yes. Yeah. You can just literally put it anywhere. Perfect. Don't have to worry about parking. Exactly. That's a big thing for me. I really like it. So I've had that. It's not great in the winter. It's bloody freezing. There's no windows. Yeah.
Give us some stats, you know, horsepower, torques, what's it packing, babes?
I couldn't honestly tell you. I think the fastest I've done, because when I picked up in Croydon and I drove back into central London and there was an A road for quite a lot of it, that was the most terrifying experience I've ever had, being one of those like next to people doing 70 miles an hour. And I think it got up to sort of 45, 50 miles an hour.
Okay.
And have you got the 45 mark model or the 80?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, right. He's clearly just Googled this, hasn't he?
I have just Googled it. Well, the 45 model is packing 5.5 horsepower.
Oh, 5.5?
Yes, and the 80 is packing 17.
Oh, no, I think it's 4.5.
You've gone...
I think it's not very fast. It's pretty basic. Yeah, maybe 4.5, 5 horsepower sounds like nothing though.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean it'll weigh.
Oh yeah,
next to
much as a J-cloth. Yeah.
When I first got it, sorry, this is a boring story, but I'm going to go with it anyway. I parked outside. I can't remember where it was, but I was like on Bond Street or somewhere. Oh no, it's in Knightsbridge. I parked somewhere because I had to run into a shop to get something, and I parked, and the handbrake had a problem, and I couldn't get the handbrake off, and it's just a wiring issue with the sensor, and anyway, couldn't get the handbrake off. So, but I was parked in quite an illegal spot. So a group of people helped me lift it onto the pavement.
No, is that right?
Lifted it onto the pavement.
Yes, you made it
there
mind.
Until someone could come and collect it.
Okay, here's one for you. Imagine that you're not living in central London, because I think this is important, because the central London thing might actually sway your decision making. You've moved outside of the city, you've got a double garage. What is your two car fantasy garage? There's no price limit on this, but think about it in terms of your lifestyle, two cars that need to kind of do a bit of everything for you.
I did this the other day, but I had 3 cars. So
okay. Well, do you know what? You can do 3. Because it's okay. You, we can do 3 cars. Go on.
Okay, there we go. I was going to say I didn't want to have to let one go. I would go for something like a nice big SUV, kind of Porsche Macan or something like that.
Yep.
Just as like daily driver, bike in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, I want to have dogs in my future life, so dog, like everything for that.
Good choice.
I would then have a 911 2.7 RS.
Okay.
Excellent choice.
Nice.
More than excellent. Summer, better than excellent.
Summer country roads.
Mm. It's almost like you've thought about this, Jamie.
Yeah. This is like ultimate, like in California, maybe, Jason.
Oh, yes.
And then the third one, which is a bit weird, and I don't actually even know what it's called, but you know those weird little Honda electric things?
Ah, the E, the Model E.
Yeah.
Honda E.
Really weird looking, like, I want one of those.
Quite retro from the outside, but very modern
like
on the inside.
Box
I like them though. I mean, as I say, as far as electric cars go, because they have got a retro styling, but they look quite cool, I think.
I've decided it's quite cool. I don't know why.
Have you had to go in one, Jamie?
No, I just keep seeing them.
I drove one recently on a TV review. I tell you what, it was brilliant. It was really great. Yeah,
look,
it was a great
inside,
place to be.
Super futuristic.
Yeah, it's really beautiful, actually.
Yeah, so that's my...
Range ain't so good, but, you know, as a little London tear around, absolutely.
Yeah, I think they're quite cool. They're a bit weird looking, but I think they're quite cool. So,
no,
yeah,
like
that's
them.
Those are my 3.
I like them.
So, right, here's a question for you. We ask everyone this question, because I think this is probably our best question, and that is that me and Dave believe that motoring and music go well together. So... Ooh. Just imagine like a fantasy drive. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what car are you in?
Okay. So south of France.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Like
nice.
In
Did you get that? Nice.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Nice.
See?
Not far from Nice, maybe like in between some vineyards, like sun's out, south of France. Nice road, because this is a problem with the UK. The roads are terrible, and
yeah.
Need to be better with that. I'll go with the 911 as the car.
Soft top, Targa, or hard top?
Targa would be nice.
Nice.
A nice Targa, but like old air-cooled 911, and what music? You know what? I don't know why I'm going to say this, but I could listen to country music on a road trip. Yeah, I reckon.
In the south of France?
Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking. I could listen to country music whilst driving, but maybe in the south of France I want something like a little bit more like I'm
chic.
In a film. Like, I'm
in a
film.
I mean, not necessarily chic the band, but chic as a style.
That's a good question. Right, let me think. Band, what's like a... Do you know Jungle? I'd listen to Jungle.
What, as in drum and... Oh, okay. Right, not like drum
not
and bass.
Drum and bass.
Right, I was going to say, because I mean, that's a bit full on for the south of France as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. No, drum and bass. Just chilled music on the south of France roads.
Not a bit of Matt Monroe on days like these?
No.
Do you remember the scene of the Italian Job through the tunnel?
Oh, nice. Yeah, okay. That is like you're in a film.
But mind you, what I will say is you and your now apparent love for country music, that's going to go down well in the States, isn't it?
Hey? I'm going to...
IndyCar beckons, babes.
I know. Maybe... Oh, no. If I come back and I have an American accent and yeah. I've just changed completely, please slap me. And I give you permission to do that.
Well, listen, I tell you what we'll do is that we will get you back on here, Jamie Chadwick, and then we will assess whether your accent has changed or not. And you can tell us all about your adventures in IndyCar, because genuinely, I think it's really exciting and we'd love to find out about it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Right, on that note.
I'm thinking, I'm changing actually. It's not California you're going to. It's Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee. That's where you're going to go live. Because guess what? A lot of them do. Darrow used to live there. Yeah, there's quite a few drivers live in Nashville. I think because it's in the middle, isn't it?
It's kind of central, isn't it? Yeah, for me.
And I think it's a really groovy place. Yeah. And guess what? They all like country music.
There you go.
Let's see. Yeah, I think we do race in Nashville. Lights do race in Nashville. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Perfect. Well, on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Ah, we do. And I'm sure we'll get an invite for the line dancing at some point.
Absolutely.
Moving forward, eh?
Yep, we can do our routine.
Thumbs in, belt hooks, cowboy boots. Anyway, that is it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux, well, they'll tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thank you. But a huge thanks to our very special guest this week, the one and only Jamie Chadwick.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure, Jamie. Thank you very much. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Until next time, we'll see you soon. Ta-da.